Good morning, the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in. I'm physically here in Los Angeles, so don't get trampled in the rush if you're going down to East Lake. A lot of things to get to today, even though I know it's the middle of the week. We're supposed to be taking a breather these days, but wait till you actually hear what's trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
Yeah, so I don't know. Producer Darren Casey is there on East Lake Avenue in running the big board. Have you eaten breakfast? Has it settled?
No, but thanks for calling my attention to that, because now I'm hungry.
Excellent. And by the way, did you watch any of the All-Star game last night?
I was actually playing in my softball championship game yesterday, but I was keeping track of it.
Well, you wouldn't mention that unless you guys won. Did you win?
We did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see how you dropped our championship game.
Yeah.
Well, was it fast pitch or old fat beer-drinking man pitch?
Lob it as slow as you can, little meatballs over the plate.
Well, you know, you're in good company. Actual Major League Baseball players, only about 15% of them watch the All-Star game because they know it's worthless.
That's interesting.
I watched highlights of the Home Run Derby, even though I don't like, you know, Bryce Harper. I know the guy can swing. Everyone does, and I watch. You know, that is almost more. It's cooler. It's a slam dunk of the All-Star game. It's just pure hitting. It's great. But no, I didn't watch any of the.
Well, the All-Star game turned into the Home Run Derby. There were 10 home runs in the game.
Yeah, I guess it practically is anyway. And the American League won, and I forgot which Mariners were in it.
Gene Segura he should have been the MVP. I think he hit a 3-run home run.
Yeah.
Mitch Haniger played. He struck out looking. Nelson Cruz, I think he drew a walk, as far as I saw. And then Edwin Diaz was our closer, who did not perform well. However, he did end up being the winning pitcher of the game.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a yawner of a game. You know, it's one of those things that if you're in the town where it is and you get tickets, then of course you go because look at all the stars and all that. But if you don't, you don't watch it. That was, remember the year Safeco Field opened, its inaugural year for the Mariners, the Major League Baseball All-Star game was in Seattle. And it was really, really cool. Because there are all these events. If you're actually in the town, then you see literally, you know, all the luminaries in baseball, including Hall of Fame guys, just walking around. So that was cool. And it was cool, you know, back then, because of course we were, you know, it was still your station, the Mariners.
We had 8 All-Stars that year too.
Yeah, it was huge. And I'm not naming names. I'm just saying that a different company was in charge back then, and we could not get them to answer the phone for normal stuff. But the All-Star game suddenly is in Seattle, and the entire management team flies out from this unnamed town in Pennsylvania. And suddenly they're here. They're all over us at that point because it's the All-Star game at the brand new Safeco Field, which back in the day it was the shiniest. It was the best place in baseball.
It still is,
but except for one thing. Well, and maybe it'll be different when they drop the viaduct. I don't know. I think it's still too close to the water. I mean, pardon me, not close enough to the water. Because I will say this: if you're not a National League fan, I get it. However, if you are, there's only one place, and that's AT&T Park in San Francisco, where you literally can hit a home run into the water. See, it should be like that in Seattle. Yeah, and it's called a splash shot. And that's the thing, is I've always thought that maybe Seattle missed out on an opportunity to do something like that. It's really, really, really cool. But still, though, here's the difference, though. You cannot beat the view. I mean, even in Colorado, you can't beat the view in Seattle. Because if you're along the third baseline, you turn around or you're up there on the mezzanine, and look, you got the Olympic Mountains. You know, you look north, and you have a really cool skyline downtown Seattle, and then you get the water. So that's tough to beat. So, you know, I absolutely grant Safeco that. Also, I'll tell you this, best food in Major League Baseball is at Safeco. It really honestly is.
And it's only getting better.
Yeah, and in San Francisco, there's 2 strikeouts. The new 49ers stadium in Santa Clara, horrible dump, terrible place with terrible food, horrible place. I mean, it cracks me up. They were just so proud of it. It's a dump. That's the deal. There's the Quest is way better, food's way better, everything's better. Their seating view, proximity to the field is better. Also at Safeco for baseball, it's a great venue. You're close to the action. The food's terrific. And so there. So I will tell people that. And I'll, did you know in college football, listen to this deal. I know we're about a month and a half, I guess, away from college football. Did you know about this change that last year, because of all the touchbacks for kickoffs, what happened was, you know, teams were responding by kicking these moonshot kickoffs to try to get the guy out of the end zone and force a return. Well, so this year in college football, if that happens, the kickoff returner can do a fair catch, like it's a punt, and really? Then get the ball at the 25. Did you read that? Did you know that's happening?
I did not. And so you're saying that they would kick it high up in the air so that it wouldn't go
to
back.
Force a return.
Yeah, it wouldn't go back out.
Yeah, because there were so many touchbacks.
Yeah,
and all that, because they were, you know, the kickoffs moved up.
They're
and everything,
trying,
so they're,
for safety reasons. They're
for safety
to,
reasons, yeah. And so what teams were doing was just, hey, just kick a moonshot, get the guy out of there. So what college football did to respond is that the kickoff returner can come out of the end zone and he can fair catch a kickoff and get it at the 25.
Oh, wow!
And that people, well, you wait, people that first week are going to be saying what the actual F-bomb, but that's what's going on. So there's that. Well, you know what? I'm letting you down easy because now I have to hit you with, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for some reason, is becoming this retro rock star to millennials because she's the anti-Trump or whatever. And I'm on the record here saying that, listen, because I am outcome-based, I'm results-based. So far, if there is a reason that voters put Donald Trump in the White House, it's because of Neil Gorsuch and now Kavanaugh. These two guys in their early 50s are going to be in the Supreme Court for 30 or 40 years. They are praying that Ruth Bader Ginsburg makes it out of the Trump administration. So all over Twitter, all over social media, people are trading these memes of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's 85, like doing yoga. You know, planking. She's on her elbows and her toes with a straight back. And they're convincing themselves, each other, that she's just super healthy. And she looks healthy as a bird. You know, she's thin, you know, super thin and all that. But she's falling asleep during the State of the Union. You know, she's getting into her wine. She's boozing it up. And she's bent over and the whole thing. Well, anyway, all right. Then I wish her a long life because I'm a nice guy. Her daughter-in-law, I did not know this. Her son's a record producer. His wife, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's daughter-in-law, is an opera singer in Chicago. She's a soprano. And she thought, I don't know if they had a fight at Thanksgiving or what, but she decided that the thing to do in 2018 in response to Trump is to release an album celebrating Ruth Bader Ginsburg through opera. And I don't even know if you believe me on this. True or false, Darren, am I making this up?
I mean, it sounds made up, but I know what you're about to do. So,
and I'm sorry, folks, if you're just waking up or you're in your car or whatever, I have to do this because you just have to hear this. This is I'll play you one cut, and then after the break, I'll play you the second cut. So here's the first of nine songs in the album called Ruth Bader Ginsburg Notorious RBG, A Life in Song. That's what, by the way, that's what the kids call her, the Notorious RBG, because it's a riff on the late rapper Biggie Smalls, the Notorious B.I.G. So anyway, they call it the Notorious RBG. This is her daughter-in-law, 61 years old, singing about what qualities a president should look at for a Supreme Court justice. Let's all take a listen.
What qualities should a president seek in a Supreme Court?
NPR legal affairs correspondent and occasional.
There you go. I attribute this to government radio. I was tuned in this morning to National Public Radio, and they had this puff piece about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And if I didn't know, I would assume someone paid someone else to parody that.
Is this going to be in a play of some kind or
no? It's just an operatic.
It's not a play about the Supreme Court.
The reason that Carmen is a wonderful opera is because I don't speak French and I'm not aware that it doesn't rhyme. Okay, it just sounds great. Okay, that's the deal. Anyway, that's a little taste. When we come back, I'll play you the operatic interpretation of a letter that Ruth Bader Ginsburg got from a fan. That and more coming up. It is Brian Suits filling in. Also, when we come back, John Decker from Fox will talk to us about congressional fallout from Helsinki. Also, a guy from the BBC, a Russian speaker, is going to tell us how the Russian media is reacting to Helsinki. That. AM 770 KTTH, the Jason Ranch Show. Welcome back. Wednesday morning, Brian Suits filling in for Jason. And the president was about an hour late yesterday for what was supposed to be an 11 a.m. Hastily called press conference from a cabinet meeting. And it went to about 11:50 Pacific time. And then he clarified his story was that when he said, why would Russia at Helsinki when a question was asked of Putin, Trump's answer was, why would Russia do it? He said, my intelligence community, Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, et cetera, said that Russia did it. but then he said, you know, there's lots of people. And then he said, why would Russia do it? Yesterday, he said that what he meant to say was, why wouldn't Russia do it? And so now they're doubling down on that. John Decker joins us from Fox News. And I get the feeling, John, that the Republican congressional delegation didn't exactly buy that. I'm not seeing today some sort of a full-throated support for how the president explained this.
Yeah, they want this story, Brian, to just go away because it's really difficult for them. To explain away the president's comments, despite the fact the president said yesterday that he misspoke when he made his initial comments at that joint press conference with Russian President Vladimir Putin. I think the big question is, why did it take over 24 hours to get that explanation from the president? After all, it's not like the president left that joint press conference, got in the motorcade, and got on Air Force One and flew back to the U.S. He actually stayed in Helsinki to do two interviews with two of my Fox colleagues, Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity, before departing Helsinki. So he and his communications team certainly had ample time to see what the blowback was on every American cable outlet after the president's joint press conference.
Well, so my sense of it is that they want this to go away, and since it's not going away organically, maybe refocus on Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court nomination. Is my spidey sense correct on that?
I think it is. You know, I think that's a good read on the situation. You know, for Republicans, they acknowledge and realize that the midterm elections are just a few months away. They don't want this hanging over their head, you know, trying to explain away inexplicable comments made by the president at that joint press conference, which took place 48 hours ago in Helsinki. They want to talk about the issues that are important to them. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why the president did make that statement yesterday, that delayed statement yesterday, was because he saw all the statements that were coming out, distancing themselves from the president, coming from Republican lawmakers. That's just not a good place to be for the president.
All right, John Decker from Fox News here at the White House, and we'll see. Already, the president's already tweeted in response to Morning Joe today, so he's off and running. We'll see where the day ends up. John, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Brian. Have a good day.
All righty, and so here's what I'm talking about. As I'm driving in this morning, I have YouTube TV. And I'm channel surfing as I'm driving because, you know, you can. And so on Morning Joe, they had Joe Scarborough and his wife slash co-host. I don't know if that's official yet, but they were not on the show. So Willie Geist was hosting, and they had George Will on. George Will is a vocal anti-Trumper. In fact, he's gone so far that way that he literally has said, The only way to fix the GOP is to have it get its ass handed to it this fall. And he really says that with a serious face. And then he's going on denouncing, he came up with a new term, Helsinki Republicans. So right around then, Trump tweeted right about 10 minutes after 4 a.m. this morning, Trump tweeted, quote, "Some people hate the fact that I got along well with President Putin of Russia. They would rather go to war than see this. It's called Trump derangement syndrome, exclamation point, close quote. And so that he started talking about the tax cuts and all that, but he clearly was watching Morning Joe this morning and seeing George Will sitting there denounce him. So that happened. We tell you what, we ran out of time this break. When we come back, I'll play Darren more of his new favorite album, the daughter-in-law of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, dropping an operatic album in tribute of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 85-year-old superannuated Supreme Court Justice. Adam Moore coming up. It is the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason on AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. Brian Suits filling in for Jason. He's on vacation. And if you're just waking up, if you're one of those bottom of the hour people, then I may as well get this out of the way before you have any breakfast. And Darren, I hear that you are eating right now. So you are taking care of breakfast?
Yeah, I had a little granola bar.
All right, before we get to toll talk, tunnel talk, and also what is the Russian media, and I just did air fingers, think about the Helsinki meeting. And also the clip that didn't make it into the White House or the Kremlin's transcript. It's the weirdest thing. It happened to be the one that we played on Monday live. It was the one takeaway at the end of the show at 9 a.m. The thing that I pulled and played, that's the thing that did not make it into the Kremlin's transcript or the White House's transcript. It's not like it wasn't broadcast, but we'll get to that here in just a second. And why? Because Ruth Bader Ginsburg's daughter-in-law has cut an album of operatic tributes to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You talk about... You know what they talk about personality cult for Trump. What was Obama for 8 years? You know, elementary school kids singing about Obamacare and things like that. Well, the hagiography, the mysticism around Ruth Bader Ginsburg, people actually sitting around in drum circles wishing good health on her and all that because they don't want more Gorsuches or more Kavanaughs. It's now extended to operatic tributes. Again, this is her daughter-in-law who's released an album, 9 songs operatically about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So tell you what, I need to warm everyone up for the one I want to play with the one I played earlier. This is the lead song. This song is called "What Quality Should a President Look For in a Supreme Court Justice?" I'm not making this up. This is not a parody. This is Ruth Bader Ginsburg's daughter-in-law. Let's take a listen.
What qualities should a president seek in a Supreme Court justice?
And I'm sorry, no matter how much you beg me, Darren, I'm not playing anymore. That's just a teaser, is what this is. All right, so this, our next little sound snippet, inspiration for this is a letter that Ruth Bader Ginsburg received from one of her clerks or something about how much she admires Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So again, this is RBG's daughter-in-law with the songs that she composed. This one based on an actual letter that she's going to set to her golden soprano operatic tones.
The way she used words, I had never seen or heard. I had never even thought sexual, female, male, gender-based discrimination. I started typing.
What? Say something.
Like
play a sports highlight. I'm not, you know, like we were saying, if I paid someone to parody that, you couldn't do better than that.
This is like a bad SNL skit.
Is there any other kind? Okay, I'll play it again if you're going to beg me like that.
People are going to hear this and
drive off the road?
Well, I think that they're going to like it, or they're going to pretend that they like it.
I want to find a reason to use this all the time for everything.
The way she used words, I had never seen or heard. I had never even thought sexual female, male, gender-based discrimination.
Don't you love the way she changes her voice for that part? And it's like a kid doing adult voice.
Do I love the way? Is that what you're asking?
Don't you? But like my daughter will go, oh, I'm dad. I'm going to let Wyatt out the door. And I'm going to go and check on the chicken. I'm going to go and get in the pool. And she'll do imitations of me just saying stuff. Yeah, and she knows that we laugh at it because it's not, you know, she's just repeating things that I've said. That's what this sounds like.
Gender-based discrimination. Typing.
Oh, so there you go. That's the album. The album is actually called The Notorious RBG, A Life in Song. In case you're scrolling through Apple Music or Google Play, just put it on the plastic. There you go. Okay, so check this out. This clip that we heard live here on Monday out of Helsinki, Putin is finishing answering one question. And then I guess it's a Reuters correspondent gets up and actually grabbed the mic. So he was on mic. It's a little distorted. But his question is, did you want Donald Trump to win the election? And did you order any of your services to assist him in winning? And Putin said, duh. He said, yes. Yes, I did.
Well, first of all, Mr. President, I'd like to congratulate you on
Oh, no, that wasn't it. I know we have it. I know we have it. I'll find it. But the reason I'm bringing it up is because it did not appear on the White House's transcript. And then also, if you went to the Kremlin's transcript, they didn't put that in there either. And I thought, that's really weird. Is someone else going to hear that and pick up on it? People picked up on other stuff. But the first thing that I picked up on was that question. And then Putin answering yes. The BBC Steve Rosenberg, he might be one of my follows of the day. I would tell you this. Follow Steve Rosenberg. He is a completely 100% colloquial Russian speaker. He's a British citizen, but he speaks Russian, speaks and reads Russian. He's been their Moscow correspondent for a couple of years. One of the great things he does is he will read Russian media. He'll watch Russian TV and he'll give you breakdowns of what it says and how they're reporting it. This is how a couple different Russian newspapers are reacting to the Helsinki meeting.
Well, today's Russian papers focus on the US president under increasing pressure back home. Kommersant says that opponents of Donald Trump have launched a counterattack after the Helsinki summit. Goes on to say that Donald Trump's opponents in the Democrat and in the Republican camps, in a rare show of unity, have accused him of unacceptable compliancy in the question of Russian interference and of inability to defend the national interests of the country. And when we move on to the Russian government paper, Российская газета, there is this, stinging criticism in an opinion piece, criticism of Donald Trump. The writer, Fyodor Lukyanov, says that in that press conference in Helsinki, Trump made a huge mistake. He had to have understood, the writer says, that one of the first questions he would have got would have been about that, in other words, Russian interference. It would have been easy to foresee a direct question, who does he believe, Putin or his own intelligence services? And he should have prepared some kind of clever answer or thought about how to get round the question. But the US president didn't do that and instead started discussing the things he always does, the Democrat service, Hillary's emails and so on. And the writer concludes that now they, in other words, Trump's opponents, will be sticking not only spokes in the wheels, but giant logs. And the president himself, feeling the negative groundswell against him, may decide not to have anything more to do with us, to retreat, even to act in the opposite way, to try...
So you see that this is an op-ed piece in the official Russian government paper. The guy's op-ed is that was such an unsuccessful answer that it might make Americans and Congress, the criticism on Trump has been pretty loud for the past 2 days. And that they're afraid that Trump's reaction will now be to do a 180 and be the toughest president on Russia, you know, since Nixon or since Reagan, I should say. And that if Trump, who's very good, the one magic power Trump has is that he can gaze upon the landscape and he knows what people are watching, what they want to see. And he knows how to craft a message that people want to hear. And right now there are a lot of people who have never lost that Cold War reflex of, you know, frankly, not trusting the Russian government, whether it's called the czar, the Soviet Union, or the president, again, with the air fingers. And so that's their fear, is that he stepped on it so badly that his only political alternative now is to turn around and be a complete hard ass on Russia. They were the one thing that the Russians took, the one takeaway they pulled out of the NATO meetings was when Trump was lecturing Angela Merkel without her there, when he was sitting there at that breakfast talking about the price of American liquid natural gas being shipped to Europe versus the price of paying for Russian gas. That really sent shockwaves through Russia. No American president has ever said that. Obama even denied that fracking existed. He didn't understand the leverage that we had on a energy dependent economy like Russia. They were terrified because the Russians know that the United States, just with the natural gas that we're not using, can put it on tankers in the form of liquefied natural gas, ship it to Bordeaux, France, and we can lowball the Russians, and you would not even notice it. And the Russians tried pushing back. Putin tried pushing back on Monday, saying, well, even in Boston, you were buying our natural gas. That's because they were trying to lowball us, and it didn't last long. But so the Russians, their takeaway on this, the American takeaway was, oh, my God, he did that. My takeaway is he did that overseas in front of Putin, bad-mouthing his own intelligence community. You don't just do that. The Russians are saying, yeah, we get that. We agree. We can't believe he did that. Now we're afraid that his political bounce back on this is that he has to come down hard on us, which is their greatest fear, because they feel like they have just the right guy in the White House to lift sanctions, sign off on Crimea, sign off on invading the Ukraine, sign off on shooting down a Malaysian airliner, sign off on assassinations in England, and, you know, et cetera. They feel like that's the way it is. Well, we'll be back right after this. It's Brian Toots filling in, by the way, at Dark Secret Place on the Twitter machine, at Dark Secret Place. When we come back, the breakdown of where the money on the Aurora Tunnel is going. You're not going to believe the lion's share over the next 26 plus years of the tolls. You will not believe what it's going to. We'll get to that right after this. The Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. Brian Suits filling in. Welcome back. AM 770 KTTH. The Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason. He's on vacation. And Cairo 7 last night with a breakdown on the upcoming toll for the 99 tunnel, for the Aurora Tunnel, and they're still saying opening by the fall, and so I'm not sure if that would crack, if that would get into a sixth year. It's overdue now, past five, but the breakdown on the tolling, it'll be time-based. Obviously, the highest tolls are going to be in the afternoon, 3 to 6, and one of the fears, so... Go back to the motivation for the tunnel. Remember that the only thing that the viaduct was used for was this overflow on I-5. We need to stop that because the viaduct is seismically unsound and the whole thing, right? So we were sold this tunnel, and that it would also help relieve the congestion, the arterial congestion, the cholesterol on I-5. And so did it actually increase through, will it increase throughput? You know, what the hell, right? I mean, you're digging a tunnel. Why not build a huge tunnel? Well, you know, effectively, they just simply replaced the capacity of the viaduct. And as we were told, the plan all along was to bring the viaduct down instead of maybe, because the thought I had a couple of years into the tunnel was, well, you know, why not retain the viaduct as a relief valve? But then you remember, no one who really is trying to go through Seattle to get north or from the north go to the south, no one really takes 99 because 99 has stoplights. You don't really do that. It's residents of Seattle who maybe work south. And I mean, let's be honest, they're working down on the Duwamish, making airplanes or whatever, and they live north. This has been a commute for 70 years. So what does it relieve? Well, if you choose to go through the tunnel, here is a little bit of the toll breakdown. And obviously, as we all know, it has to cover the cost of construction, theoretically.
And you're wondering why the state has...
And then cover the cost of maintenance and upkeep and the whole thing. That's how it works around here, right? Remember when the 520 paid itself off in like 1989 or 88, something like that? Remember how they stopped taking tolls on the 520, but for like 6 months, the toll takers, because they didn't have another gig, because they're state union employees, they just sat there in the toll booths and you just drive by. You would just sit there and drive by these state workers doing nothing but literally sitting there for a couple hours in the toll booths. Then they got rid of the toll booths because the 520 paid for itself. Okay, fine. That's the theory. That's how it's supposed to work. Here in the Pacific, I grew up dependent on the Hood Canal Bridge out in Port Angeles, and we had that same phenomenon where there were toll takers on the Hood Canal Bridge. And then for a couple of months, they literally did nothing because the thing paid for itself. But so anyway, here's a breakdown on the tolls in the up when it opens up theoretically here in the fall.
If you're wondering why the state has to toll the tunnel in the first place, we've broken down the numbers here. As mandated by the legislature, the tolls have to cover $200 million in construction costs.
$200 million for construction, okay.
Costs and $129 million in interest.
We all understand that. You know, you finance it, you float bonds, the whole thing. They cost money. Money costs money. That's what you pay for it. $129 in interest. So now we're at $200 million construction, $129 in interest. So we're at $329 to cover the cost of the tunnel so far.
So I have to pay for $170 million in routine tunnel maintenance costs.
Okay, $179 million. Over great news, $179 million over 25 years. So you can amortize that out, and you know that's not unreasonable. That would probably seismically have repaired the viaduct, but never mind. So now we're at not quite a bank breaking public construction project so far.
Collecting the toll is the biggest expense.
What?
$496 million for everything from customer service to equipment. Altogether,
you know what? You can suck on your customer service. The biggest expense for the toll revenue is going to be from actually taking the toll.
In tunnel maintenance costs. Collecting the toll is the biggest expense, $496 million for everything from customer service to equipment.
Just say $500 million, okay? Because that's almost insulting. You can take any public construction project and you can add not 10%, not 20%. You can add 30 to 40% to its final cost, minimum. By the way, that's the minimum. That's lowball. So you can take $496 million. $310,073, and you can just stick it in your customer service. It's call it $500 million because it'll be easier to stomach the $750 million it's going to be. And by the way, 25 years down the road, they're not going to add up how much the administration of taking a toll will be.
$496 million for everything from customer service to equipment. Altogether, these tolls have to cover nearly $1 billion over 27 years.
Wait a minute, didn't you already say maintenance? What do you mean customer service and equipment? You mean cash registers? But what is the customer service?
Probably the cameras that capture your license plate.
And what are they made of, ice? They have to be replaced. But no, you put them in there once, there and there you go. You know, I mean, I on the 520, they shoot my license plate every time, and every time I leave the state, I ignore it. It's going to be the same cameras in that tunnel. Okay, so that is not how does what piece of $496 million are those cameras? So again, the state of Washington.
Why it would cost that much to do that?
I don't know, but congratulations. Here's your victory song.
What qualities?
Maybe we'll change that to Washington DOT. All right, next hour, some more Trump fallout.